An estimated 70% of mothers in the U.S. work outside the home. But according to journalist and mom Amy Westervelt, the state of motherhood in America is often miserable, largely because of the expectations put on both mothers and fathers.
Women should parent like they don't work and work like they don't parent. And it extends to men, too. Like, we've done this thing where just as, like, we've sort of allowed women into the workplace but not really accommodated, you know, women's complete lives, we have now asked men to step up as parents, but they are still in this same sort of ideal worker scenario that women are.
Conforming to those expectations for Amy meant taking a single afternoon off to give birth and going back the next day with most of her coworkers unaware that she had even been pregnant. Well, now in her book, Forget Having It All, How America Messed Up Motherhood and How to Fix It, Westervelt says it's time to change those expectations. She says that America's history plays into the way that the country views motherhood and the nuclear family.
There's just this American individualism thing that, you know, has just kind of been there since the beginning, in part because of necessity. You know, if you were here and your extended family was across an ocean, you kind of had to figure it out on your own. And in part because of the Puritan thing that really focuses on each individual person's interpretation of the Bible, abilities to succeed, and that being kind of tied to how good they are as a person and all that kind of stuff. Just really got wrapped into this idea that every family is kind of an island unto themselves. And then also, I think motherhood has just always been sort of entwined with capitalism in a weird way in the U.S.
Like what? Can you say a little bit more about that?
Right. You know, we put a big emphasis on competition over care. And that kind of trickles down to this idea that caregiving, you know, we do this thing a lot in the U.S. where we talk about mothers in this way of like, oh, you know, they're nurturers and they're so valuable and the family is so important. But when it comes down to it, we don't give any actual value to caregiving tasks. So like there is no monetary support for mothers in any real way. We focus on competition and capital and sort of individual achievement at all costs over the public good.
When we talk about women, you point out numerous times in your book that the dilemma of balancing work and family has a lot less resonance for non-white women, for women of color.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Yeah, I mean, I would say even this whole idea of like the American family, it's so different depending on what background you come from and what, you know, what you saw growing up, what was normal to you, all of that, those kinds of things. And I spoke with a woman who specifically researches black middle class mothers. Her name's Dawn Dow. And she was saying that she found that in most black communities, the idea that you would stay home is actually the weirder thing, you know, that actually like these are women who've been balancing work and motherhood forever. And it's considered a good thing, a valuable thing that you're modeling that for your children, that you are giving something to the community, that your life isn't just about, you know, you and your nuclear family. It's about a broader community and a broader public. And also, I mean, there's also the fact that in many cases, for both low-income white women and women of color across the board, like there was not really an option to not balance those two things for a really long time.
And you offer a preferred frame of thinking about this that would be more inclusive, called integrated mothering, I guess, or an ideology that you introduce. What is integrated mothering? What does that assume?
It just kind of rejects this dominant idea that work and motherhood are always at odds, that those are two competing forces in someone's life. And it sort of proposes that both of those things have value, that they can coexist in a way that doesn't create tension, and that we should be supporting the existence of both of those things because they both add value to both a woman's life and her family's life and the broader community.
One cool thing about this book is that at the end of each chapter, you offer not just a policy solution, a proposed policy solution, but also a cultural solution, which underlines the fact that even if you do have some sort of top level policy fix, that doesn't necessarily change the culture. And you write about Japan being a good example of that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I hear a lot from people who talk about this whole work-life balance, motherhood work balance thing. The sort of dream is always like, if only we could just be like Sweden. You know? And I'm always like, yeah, sure. But like,
happiest,
you know,
people in the world.
Right. Sure. But when I started researching the book, I wanted to specifically not point to Scandinavian policies because I feel like there's a cultural mismatch there. And then I ended up doing some research in Japan and realized that actually they had done exactly this thing of like taking Scandinavian policies and plopping them on top of a pretty patriarchal capitalist system.
How did they do that?
It didn't work. So there were several government workers who went and did research in Scandinavia and Western Europe, and they came back with specific policies that they were like, these are the ones that we need to do. And so they rolled out subsidized daycare and equal parental leave for men and women and flex time for working parents of young children and all these things that, like, we think would be the fix a lot of times.
Yeah, you know? It sounds great.
So things you hear about, right?
In theory.
In theory, yeah. And what they found was that there just wasn't any uptake of it, in part because the culture hadn't changed along with the policies. So you had these great policies, but you still had a culture that said men are the primary breadwinners and women are the caregivers, and that said there's value to being like the last person at work, you know? And you had this older guard of executive bosses who had not come up working in a system that allowed for balancing work with really any other aspect of life. So it was hard to get them to sort of shift their thinking too. And so it's been about 10 to 15 years now, and they've since had to roll out a lot of sort of like cultural propaganda campaigns.
Okay.
The first was the Ikumen Project. It was to encourage involved fatherhood. So they had a lot of famous men who were dads, you know, that would be on posters and things like that. And there was a big push to include like involved fathers in TV shows and to show rock stars with their kids and all that kind of thing. And then now in the last couple of years, they've rolled out the Iku Boss program, which focuses on kind of retraining these older, mostly men who are in power in most companies to enable their employees to take advantage of some of these policies.
The subtitle of your book, though, is How America Messed Up Motherhood and How to Fix It. So
yes.
If policy solutions, which you do offer, if policy solutions don't kind of go the whole way, what are changes that should be happening on a personal level? What can a mother such as yourself do to change the way things are to fix motherhood?
Yeah. We do this thing a lot where we kind of expect things to just sort of naturally work out in ways, you know. We have this tendency to think that if you have to try too hard or do anything too sort of practically, that then it's like flawed in some way or it's lame or whatever. But I kind of feel like that's what it takes to actually change things. Like, you do actually have to make a concerted effort to be like, I am going to make sure that my kids don't see me as the one who's always doing household chores, you know. Or I talked to a mom who regularly takes like days away, even when it's not for work, just to like kind of force.
Oh, good for her. Yeah.
I know. I'm like, do it. Yeah, just to sort of like force this situation where like she's not the only person who knows how to like be a solo parent to her kids, you know. Or I think I mentioned this in the book. A lot of people maybe don't live near extended family and or, you know, just don't have that kind of relationship with their family. But you can kind of create these bonds with people in your community. So like, for example, I have a couple of my kids' friends who, you know, their parents and I trade off picking the kids up, and sometimes we'll trade off doing like dinners at someone's house or whatever. Just like find ways to kind of create that support system in your own life if it's not being offered to you externally.
You also mentioned having boys do babysitting early
yes.
on, just in the way that girls do.
Yes, totally. Yeah, yeah. This whole idea that women are somehow like naturally better at dealing with kids is just totally manufactured and perpetuated by the way that we continue to raise kids. So yeah, I mean, having boys babysit is huge. I think, you know, letting boys be maternal in different ways too. Like, you know, my son, when he was like 4 or 5, really wanted a baby doll. And so many people just like squashed that in him. They were just like, oh, no, boys don't have baby dolls. And I was just like, OK, now we know why men aren't good with babies. Like, geez, you know, if like everyone needs to jump on the bandwagon and tell a 5-year-old that it's like not OK for him to have a baby doll, then that seems like a problem to me. If we want to genuinely encourage men to be involved parents and give them the skills to do it.
Amy Westervelt's book is Forget Having It All, How America Messed Up Motherhood and How to Fix It. The book is out this week. Amy Westervelt, thank you so much.
Thank you.